This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. In a few minutes, we'll hear from Fairleigh Jackson of Preserve Louisiana. Of course, her organization is committed to preserving history, and right now we have people who wish to not erase history, but certainly to take away reminders of our painful past. Jason Berry has been with us and for the full hour, and before we let him go, I wanted to give you a chance to make some parting thoughts, Jason. Any thoughts about the conversation we've had today and where it's going?
Yes, indeed. I think we need, even in these economically stressed times, to find a way to put up new statues that represent where we are as a country. And I would begin with George Washington Cable, the great 19th century writer from New Orleans, who was basically driven out in the 1880s and settled in New England. He did one of the landmark novels, The Grand Essenes. His writings about Congo Square lay a groundwork that many cultural and jazz historians have tapped. He was an absolute champion of the rights of free men after the Civil War. And he was never accorded any status such as you find in statues that we see around town. And I think a good place to start would be in that empty spot where Jefferson Davis once stood. And I suspect there are people like this, black and white, men and women, in other parts of the state and the South, that we could find to give us ideas in stone and granite of the better impulses of our past.
Well, thank you, Jason. And if you haven't read City of a Million Dreams, it is the definitive work about Jason's hometown, the great city, and it is the crown jewel of Louisiana, New Orleans. Thank you, Jason.
Thank you so much, Jim. It's been a pleasure.
And before we get to Fairleigh Jackson, I know Amy in St. Francisville has been waiting patiently for some time. Let's slide her in, get Amy in line one, Matt. And Amy, good morning to you.
Good morning, Mr. Inkster. My question is very simple, I guess. What now? Assuming all the statues come down, then what's the next step? And is this going to be the end of it once that happens?
All right. Well, then let's bring Fairleigh in. As mentioned, she is one who's committed to preserving history, and those statues, in many cases, are beautiful pieces of artwork. And in New Orleans, for example, the four statues that were removed, one of them was not a beautiful piece of artwork, the Liberty Monument, but the others all had aesthetic value, and there was supposed to be a museum or a park, but it has not happened. What do we do with all these statues that are being removed, Fairleigh?
Hi, Jim. Thank you so much for having me on today, and what wonderful contributions by Jason Berry. You know, I think that the question that you just asked about what to do with these monuments really should be driven by the community, you know, and that also goes for what should replace them and what should be celebrated in their place, as opposed to kind of idolizing an era that is long gone and the lost cause. As far as, for example, we have a monument that is being discussed in Port Allen, and the West Baton Rouge Museum has generously offered to take that monument and recontextualize it in their space. So that's an example of a community coming together to, I think, do what's right here, and as Jason mentioned, to honor where we want our country to be. I wouldn't say we're there yet, but still not erase that history. And, you know, I don't think that removing a statue from a localized place where it is not really contextualized is erasing history. That's what our education should be about.
Well, John Bell Edwards was correct in correcting me on his show last Wednesday. You can't erase history. History is history, but those statues are part of history. And when they are removed, there is, of course, a cost to being reminded of a painful past. But some people believe that we need to be reminded of a painful past so that we'll never go there again, Fairleigh. And the question is, where do you draw the line? Obviously, the statues that have been removed are not the last to go. There are going to be more and more and more, but where do we draw the line?
Well, you know, I think it's very subjective, Jim. I think each statue needs to be considered for its own history and the impetus behind its erection. You know, we can look at, you know, as we always say, kind of follow the money as well. You know, let's look at who paid for this and what was the purpose for, you know, a statue to be erected. And, you know, I think you discussed this at great length as well with Mr. Barry. You know, when we can follow those dollars and to a period of time, such as Jim Crow and, you know, people trying to uphold white supremacy and a white superiority over the community, you know, all of those things need to be looked at. I don't see this as what I think has become the you know, famous term of a slippery slope, because I really do feel like if you involve the community and thoughtful discussions are had, you can actually come to a decision as to whether or not removal is best, recontextualization is best, you know, or relocation and all of that. So I think that each entity, and then whether that's the naming of a library or an actual monument, needs to be looked at by the community and talked about.
Well, the LSU Board of Supervisors last Friday voted to get rid of the Troy H. Middleton Library's name. It was renamed in 1978 by the Board of Supervisors. Middleton was the president of LSU when it opened in 1959. One of the board members in 1978, by the way, when the board voted to name it Troy Middleton, was Jay Darden, the Commissioner of Administration, who was a student member of the board at the time. And Troy Middleton is gone. It was 11 months ago in the pages of Tiger Rag that yours truly wrote a column about this, and it took 11 months, but Troy Middleton is gone, and is mentioned it's because he was a segregationist. He was a great American, but he was a segregationist, and some believe that's enough, and he should go. He wanted to keep LSU's athletic teams all white, but Russell Long also was a segregationist, on the record many, many, many times, voted for against the Civil Rights Act, and also signed the Southern Manifesto, which was specifically designed to keep black people out of public places in Louisiana and in this country. So should Russell Long's statue be outside the LSU library using the Middleton standard? I don't think anybody can say yes, it should. But here's Gary Chambers. A listener asked me to play this, and we can't play the whole thing. He went on and on and on at a school board meeting the other day, but he tore into Connie Bernard, one of the school board members, who we hopefully will have on this show, because I think she certainly deserves the chance to give her point of view. But this has gotten national exposure. Gary Chambers, of course, a firebrand activist. Here he is.
Next.
So I had intended to get up here and talk about how racist Robert E. Lee was, but I'm going to talk about you, Connie. Sitting over there shopping while we're talking about Robert E. Lee. This is a picture of you shopping. While we talking about racism and history in this country. Only white members of this board got up while we were up here talking too, because you don't give a damn, and it's clear. But I'm gonna tell you what the slaves, my ancestors said about Robert E. Lee, since you don't know history, sister. Let me tell you that they said when he got the plantation, after he got off the field where 27,000 people died at Gettysburg, Connie, Robert E. Lee was a brutal slave master. Not only did when he whooped the slaves, he said, lay it on them hard. After he said, lay it on them hard, he said, put brine on them, sort of burn them. That's what Robert E. Lee did. And you said.
All right. Now hopefully we'll have Mr. Chambers on the show as well. But Fairleigh Jackson, you're in the middle of this. You've got people who are passionate. And sometimes when people are passionate, they say things they otherwise would not. How are you navigating this minefield right now?
Well, those are very powerful and truthful words by Mr. Chambers. And, you know, unfortunately for the school board member being discussed, you know, her words were quite insensitive and a little pedantic as well. So I really commend Gary and understand the frustration that everybody is feeling. You know, we are a proud partner of the National Trust for Historic Preservation, and they have recently announced or released this statement in support of the removal of many of these statues. Again, it's a very subjective thing, a very subjective discussion. But, you know, the overall preservation movement is about equity and telling the full narrative of our American experience. And for far too long, that full narrative has been ignored and the black voices have been ignored and left out of that narrative. So there is a shift here. And again, this is not about rewriting history. It is actually about telling the full history and the full narrative of the American experience. and the black experience.
All right, we've got about a minute left, but where does the debate over tax credits stand right now?
Yeah, so as you and many of your listeners may know, we are attempting to extend the state commercial historic tax credit. And we are currently in the Senate. We went through the House, and we are awaiting an assignment in finance. But, you know, this is a tax credit that has revitalized, you know, almost 1,500 buildings around our state and put about $4 billion in private investment into this state. And so we are hoping to extend the sunset and preserve this program as it is, as a real community revitalization tool that creates jobs, revitalizes neighborhoods, adds taxes and revenue back to municipalities. And so I encourage your listeners to follow this and to receive our e-blast at preserve-louisiana.org to get involved in this effort.
Well, thank you, Fairleigh Jackson, coming up on 5 years as Executive Director of Preserve Louisiana. Today, by the way, is June 22nd. We know that. It's the 73rd anniversary of Pete Maravich, the greatest scorer in college basketball history, 3,667 points in 83 games at LSU, 44.2 points per game. Until tomorrow, for Matt Doyle, I'm Jim Inkster. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned.